Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.
I don't know about the rest of you, and in particular because I have so many listeners in Martin County and Palm Beach County and parts north. But I live in Broward County, and I have spent the last 33 years basically working on stations that were predominantly in Palm Beach, but also in Broward, Dade, and the Bahamas, and all the way across to Fort Myers and stuff. So I've always had listeners from the southern part of our signal. But most of my listeners are not. I get it. And I love you guys. I appreciate every single person who listens to my show on a regular basis. But I got to tell you, you're not having an experience that I'm having right now. And lucky you. Apparently, they have decided to shut down the Miami Seaquarium. Now, I got to give you a little backstory on this, all right? When I first moved down to South Florida, not only did the Miami Seaquarium exist, but there was a Fort Lauderdale, whatever you call them, marine park. And I can't even remember what it was called now. It was on the 17th Street Causeway. I think it was called Ocean something. Or Ocean World. I don't even remember. But I came down here, and I was still left of center. Not crazy like they are today, but I was I was a vegan long before anybody else was. I just didn't like the idea of animal experimentation. Many of you, now that the statute of limitations has expired, I actually freed monkeys from a laboratory at Columbia University in the early 70s. So I was like one of these crazy animal rights people. I mean, not that anymore. But it was part of my shtick. And when I moved down here, I was really disturbed by these parks that were filled with like dolphins and whales and all kinds of sea creatures in dirty tanks. And it just freaked me out. My daughter's earliest memories, and this is not to compare her to Kamala Harris, who says she was in her stroller when her mother asked her, you know, what's important to you? And she said, freedom. No. My daughter didn't say freedom for the dolphins. She didn't. But her earliest memory is of being on picket lines at this marine park. I wish I could remember the name of it. It'll come to me, or somebody will send me an email and tell me what it was, or a text message. But we would march up and down in front of this place saying, you know, free the dolphins. You know, dolphins are not the fish you eat. I don't know. We had all kinds of signs. So I've never been a big fan of these parks, although, let me say this. Children, little kids, really enjoy going to zoos and going to parks and going to circuses, in spite of the fact that they make adults feel somewhat uncomfortable because, you know, it's not really... Animals don't want to be in cages. Dolphins don't want to be swimming around in dirty tanks. We know that. But children, they don't know that. And they just really, really love it. And I'll never forget, we were at a protest, a picket, one time with the AARF. It was an organization down here, a local organization, not a PETA organization, but a different one, that really did a great job manning picket lines. That was their thing. And so we were down there, and the owners of Ocean World, I think that's what it was called, Ocean World, they invited us in, a few representatives in, so that we could see that, in fact, they were taking pretty good care of these sea creatures, and you weren't going to be able to sell most of us that line. But I took my daughter with me into this visitation. That child was so happy that all she talked about for like the next 6 weeks was, I want to go back. I want to see my dolphin. I want to see, I mean, she was little. She was 3-4 years old. And it definitely softened my heart. It did. I didn't protest anymore. I didn't like the idea, but I didn't protest anymore because I saw how for many children, that may be the only way they ever get to see up close and personal. Don't forget, back then we had some National Geographic specials, but it wasn't like today where you could actually follow the pod as it goes from the Atlantic Ocean to the Caribbean. I mean, it just wasn't that together. So you had to go to one of these theme parks if you wanted to actually see a sea creature up close. So I got a little softer about that. But yesterday and today, my email box has been literally flooded with what looks to me as though it were a single email that was crafted by an animal rights group and then sent to people who they thought would find this very, very important and compelling and send it to everybody on their list. Well, apparently, I'm still on some of those lists. And apparently, I have a lot of people in my circle who still do that kind of protest. And so this is what I have received from, I stopped counting at 145. And I'm still getting them here. The most recent one came in at 249 today. And I'm part of a whole slew of names, some of which are people in the media and most of which are not. It says, this subject line is Save the Miami Seaquarium. And then it says, I hope you're doing well. Clever, right? Whenever they put a line like that in the beginning, you think it's actually somebody you know. I'm reaching out to you today as a resident who loves the Seaquarium. I've been visiting since I was a kid, and it's been heartbreaking to hear about the termination they've received. The Seaquarium teaches us about marine life and the importance of conservation. Losing it would be a huge loss, not just our community, but for the education and awareness it brings. I understand that there are probably lots of factors at play here, but I'm asking if there's anything you can do to help. Can we find a way to keep the Seaquarium open? It means so much to so many of us, and it would be such a shame to see it close over something that could be resolved. And I received over 145 at the last count of these emails. And I don't even know what happened. Like, I guess the lease has expired. And I guess it's not being renewed. And I'm sure that the people who put this together are looking at many different aspects. I don't think they're so much looking at the conservation aspect, but there's a financial aspect to having something like the Miami Seaquarium in Miami. So the residents are pleading for this not to be taken away. And they're using every tool that they have. And now the internet is like, you don't have to have somebody standing in front of Publix with a petition anymore. You just send this to the right people and it'll end up everywhere. And here I am reading it on the air. Now, interestingly enough, I knew that along with this plea to save the Miami Seaquarium, some people who received it were going to respond negatively. And so I started reading some of them. And boy, I tell you, one thing about the animal rights movement is it hasn't changed. We still use the same arguments that we used in the 60s and 70s and forevermore. And they want sympathy. And I saw some very compelling ones and then some very angry ones, really angry ones. Because one thing I've always said about some animal rights movements, particularly PETA, is they're so angry. You know, I used to get in debates all the time where they would say, you know, it's not fair to use animals for the betterment of human beings' conditions. And there was a time when I actually might have considered that a good argument, but that passed many, many years ago. And I'll never forget, I was posed a question on the radio in probably 1994 or 95, where the big news story that everybody was talking about was the use of a baboon heart in a child until they could find a suitable replacement heart for this child. And I was asked by another talk show host, we were having like a battle of the talk show hosts kind of thing, and I was the, you know, the one person that would stand up for animal rights at all. I wasn't even that great at it, but I was at least open. And they said to me, I had two children, and they said to me, if Jenny or Derek was about to die because they needed a heart and there was no human heart available, would you consent to a baboon being killed and the baboon's heart serving as a temporary heart for your child until a human heart could be obtained? It didn't take me but 3 seconds to say, of course I would. And then the debate began, like, whoa, what makes your life more important than the baboon's life and blah, blah, blah. Well, if I have to tell you what makes my child's life more important than the baboon's life, there's nothing to talk about. You're just too stupid to talk to. Not for nothing. Today, we don't have to have this debate anymore because you can do all of these things with software. You don't have to actually do some of the scientific experimentation that you used to have to do because you can figure this all out in a, I don't know whether it's an algorithm or whatever it is, but you can duplicate the results of testing that used to be done on living animals or by killing animals with a computer program. So we don't have to have this debate anymore. But when that was posed to me in that manner, trust me, I didn't hesitate for a moment. Not that I think baboons are even cute enough to worry about. No, I'm just kidding. But no, it didn't. Of course, I believe human life is definitely more important than animal life. It's biblical. You know, God told Adam, you name all these things, all these creatures, and then, you know, you're responsible for making sure that they don't have terrible lives. You don't want them to suffer, but they make awful good eating, Adam. And you're in control. I give you dominion with the words that God used over the animals. So I exercise that dominion. Not often. I'm not a big meat eater, never was, and still aren't, although you cannot tell me that a good, you know, porterhouse isn't going to be wonderful tonight, as a matter of fact. No, just kidding. But that's the kind of stuff that the animal rights movement has had to wrestle with over the last 18 years, right? So when I got all these emails, I thought, I wonder how long this can go on, right? Well, let me just go back and check my email right now. Let me tell you, the last one that I read to you was at 2:09 this afternoon, and it was, I had stopped counting at 145, but I'm guessing it was probably in the 150s at that point. So now we are at, what is it, 317? And let me tell you how many there are now. I have 4 more just since 2:09. This is a massive effort by this group to make sure the Miami Seaquarium shuts down. So my obligation to my listeners is to get as much information as I can. And by the end of the week, I'll have some information and we'll actually talk about that because I think it is fascinating. We're in a whole different era. Why do we need these kinds of theme parks anymore? And if we can make the case for them, you know, why wouldn't you let a community decide that? I think the closer to a community you are when you make decisions, the better the decision is going to be. If the people of Miami like having the Seaquarium there, shouldn't they get to weigh in on this? Just as they like having a zoo. You could be the biggest animal rights activist in the world, and I know some of them. But you can't deny the look of sheer just fascination when you take a kid to a zoo. They just, they can't believe it. It's a peacock. Oh my gosh, look, it's a pink flamingo. It's really pink, Mom. Look at the monkeys. Look at the bears, lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. But I think I'm interested in the subject because it's something that I used to spend a lot of my time and energy on. So we'll see. I'm going to do a little research into it. But if you received one of these emails, please tell me. You know, just drop me an email, joyceradio@gmail.com, and tell me if you received one of these emails, and if so, how many of them you've received. Because I must be on like everybody's mailing list to have gotten this many. And it certainly raised my level of awareness, which is all it was probably ever intended to do. All right. Don't forget, if you download the 850 app, you'll be able to listen to our podcasts, all of them, not just my No Restraint podcast, not just the My Daily podcast, but Unidentified Alien podcast, the Morning Show podcast, any podcast of any show that you want to listen to will be there on your app, on your laptop. If not, just check out our website, 850wftl.com, so you can participate in our contest. And let me take this quick break. I'll be right back.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
Finally, I've been able to find the beginnings of the research that I'm going to need to do over the next couple of weeks. The Miami Seaquarium has been evicted by Miami-Dade County. And the protesters all got party hats and cafecito and pastelitos, but they may have to wait to celebrate because apparently it's the eviction notice has been refused by Seaquarium. They're standing their ground. They sent a letter to the mayor's office stating the county has no grounds for eviction. And for over a decade, demonstrators have been showing up to the Miami Seaquarium, well over a decade, I can guarantee that, to protest the living conditions of the animals at the park. Wendy Fernandez, a local activist with South Florida Animal Rights, I know that organization, and a staffer for PETA, has apparently been reporting to the various newspapers around the country. The protesters were planning a party to celebrate and to thank the mayor, Daniela Levine Cava, for making the eviction possible. Miami-Dade County said the park's failure to maintain those animals is exactly why its mayor sent them an eviction notice. But protesters may have to wait a bit longer to celebrate because the Seaquarium says it has proof that contradicts the claims of the eviction notice. Oh, this is going to be a lively topic. The name of the park's operator is the Dolphin Company, and its president Eduardo Albor was served a notice of termination of the lease yesterday. No, actually today. Officials said the Let me look here. You get this straight, because like I said, I didn't know anything about this, and now I'm going to got to get up to speed. A notice of termination of the lease was last week on Thursday, that the tenant violated their lease by treating their animals poorly and keeping the Seaquarium's grounds improperly maintained. So this is going to be an ongoing story, and I want to make sure that we cover it. Because, see, that's the beauty of local talk radio. This is not going to be a story for some, you know, national host, maybe, if they happen to have a love for animals, and particularly marine animals, maybe they'll cover it a little bit. But this is a story that affects us, our communities, and brings up some pretty intense emotional subjects that I'm not afraid of. Because let me tell you something, I'm in a good mood today. The reason I'm in a good mood is because they threw out a bunch of these charges in Fulton County against Trump and the co-defendants. And I've been waiting for this Judge McAfee to do something. Yeah, I'd like to see him throw this case out of Fulton County, because I don't think that Fonnie Willis and Nathan Wade can prosecute this case. I don't think they ever should have, but I don't think they can now that they've been so compromised by their own behavior. You know, and by the way, Fonnie, this is not racist. This is just reality. Welcome to the real world. So I think that, you know, Judge McAfee could move the venue, change the venue of this case. And that would be a very big deal, because I don't think Donald Trump could get a fair jury to judge his case in Fulton County any more than he can in New York City, any more than he can in Washington, D.C., or in San Francisco. I mean, there's some places you just know ain't happening. So it would be interesting. I'm dying to see what happens there. However, there's something wonderful about finding out that this judge is actually looking at these charges. There are over 40 charges in Fulton County, 40 separate charges. Like, she was throwing everything but the kitchen sink at Donald Trump and his co-defendants. Now, for instance, the former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, all the charges except for the RICO charge have been dropped against him. That's a huge deal, especially for Mark. So I'm fascinated now. I'm interested in to see the direction that Judge McAfee is heading. But he has now proven to me that he's looking very carefully at this case and hopefully going to make some decisions about this case that should have been made a long time ago. This case never should have been brought. It definitely should not have been brought in the manner in which it was brought. You know, they just made it up, you know, using the RICO statute and against Rudolph Giuliani, of all people, who successfully used that RICO statute to go after mobsters in New York. I mean, really, the idiotic nature of that has always struck me. So that was the good news I got today. And then I got that flood of emails for the last 24, more than 24 hours, maybe 36 hours now, to either save or get rid of the Miami Seaquarium. So you betcha I'm going to cover both stories and other stories, because it's a beautiful thing to have a wealth of subjects to talk about. Now, I do have to say that I understand that some of you got very confused when you turned on the show prior to mine, and you're used to hearing Dan Bongino, and instead you were listening to the Seminoles. You were listening to a live game. I think it was basketball. I didn't really listen, so I'm sorry. I was out. But whatever it was, you may have been upset. You may not have understood what was going on. So let me give you a heads up. It's going to happen again tomorrow, because apparently the Seminoles are doing well. And when the Seminoles do well, we are required to carry their games. We, 850 WFTL. And so in the past, that would make me very sad, because it generally happened at noon, which is when I was on the air. But today, I come on at 3 and it's over. So I'm less upset, but I'm sure the Dan Bongino listeners and Dan himself are not going to be happy about yesterday, or rather today and tomorrow, but it won't last forever. So just calm down, and I'll always be here at 3 o'clock. That's my promise, that I'll be here tomorrow at 3 o'clock. No matter what plays before my show. So don't go away and not come back. Stay here and wait for me. Did you ever tell your kids that? Stay right there and wait for me. I'll be back. And they start crying, right? Don't cry. Just wait for me. All right, I got a lot more to talk about today. The judge dismissing 6 charges. That's pretty big. Donald Trump's reaction to it. That was hilarious. And of course, This minimalistic, really unprecedented majority of 1 in the House of Representatives. Like, is that even a majority? Essentially not. You lose 1 vote and it goes to the VP, right? you can't operate like this. This is not a majority. It may be technically, but it's not a working majority. And why is it happening? What is going on that these last two speakers, maybe actually the last four speakers, don't seem to be able to herd their cats and at least tell their cats, you can't leave until after the election, where we will have an opportunity to win some seats so that our majority stays intact and grows. Instead, now they're going to be fighting to maintain a one-seat majority? That's crazy. And trust me, that don't happen to Democrats. They don't do that. They'll stay there. If you have to prop them up and put them in a wheelchair with an IV, they're coming. But for some reason, you know, yesterday you had yet another Republican say, I'm leaving. Not at the end of my term. Not before the next election. I'm leaving next week. Which leaves them with a one-seat majority. Which, again, I don't call that a majority. So we're going to talk about that. I also need to remind you that there's some other pretty compelling news regarding all these cases, against Trump. And now watching these testimonies where we find out that exculpatory evidence was withheld, I'm getting a little bit nervous about the fact that we don't seem to have any checks and balances that are in operating order anymore. And so the Department of Justice, FBI, CIA, all of these agencies are running amok. And that is scary. Stay right where you are. Quick break, and I'll be right back. So I have mixed feelings about the bill that passed the House, the TikTok block, because it's not really a ban if they sell. They gave TikTok permission to sell the company, or I guess ByteDance, which is the parent company. They gave it permission to sell, or they would ban it. The problem is, I was listening to all these people who use TikTok as a vehicle for their businesses, or even just as a place where they can go and have conversations that they might not be able to have anywhere else on mass levels, right? So there are businesses operating off TikTok. For the life of me, I don't know how that works, but it's true because I saw a number of people testifying to that. And freedom of speech is very important, especially important to someone like me, because this is what I do. I get to say controversial things on the radio because we have laws in this country that give me the right. So it's a big deal. Elon Musk spent a fortune buying what was formerly Twitter, turning it into X, because he didn't like the way they were shutting down conservative speech. So here's a news flash for you that I'm just watching as the story begins to unfold. Apparently, Musk just canceled a deal that he had with Don Lemon. Don Lemon, the former CNN guy. I don't like Don Lemon's show. I never did. But he said that Musk canceled his partnership with Don Lemon after an interview he conducted for the show. So in an Instagram post, Lemon explained the sudden cancellation, which happened hours after their conversation, which took place on Friday. This past Friday. He said, this is what he said on Instagram. And as I said, I don't like this guy, but I love the freedom of speech. He said, Musk has canceled the partnership I had with X, which they announced as part of their public commitment to amplifying more diverse voices on their platform. He informed me of his decision hours after an interview I conducted with him on Friday. That interview will remain the premiere episode of the Don Lemon Show on Monday, March 18th. Elon publicly encouraged me to join X with a new show, saying I would have his full support and that his digital town square is for all. He and his team pursued the deal in numerous conversations and made significant commitments about the support X would provide for the show. I made the decision to work with them that my work would be available to the most people in the largest possible venue. I took him and his management team's word that they, for the first time, were interested in working directly with new and diverse voices. There were no restrictions on the interview that he willingly agreed to, and my questions were respectful and wide-ranging, covering everything from SpaceX to the presidential election. We had a good conversation. Clearly, he felt differently. His commitment to a global town square where all questions can be asked and all ideas can be shared seems not to include questions of him from people like me. Our conversation will be available on YouTube, wherever you listen to podcasts, and X. This will just be the first of many episodes of The Don Lemon Show. While Elon goes back on his word, I will be doubling down on my commitment to free speech, and I cannot wait to get started. And then he posted an image from the interview of him speaking with Musk. And, you know, he's already got this sort of layback. He's wearing jeans and a collared shirt with a sweater, very preppy looking, but not the look that he had on CNN for sure. And Musk is, he's got a jacket on and sneakers. It's kind of typical. And under the picture, the caption of the picture says, "First guest, Elon Musk, like you've never seen him before. You won't want to miss this at hashtag The Don Lemon Show. Watch on YouTube. Listen wherever you get your podcasts." And then he also announced the cancellation in a video on X, which is fun. It's just fun to watch all of this, right? He's walking in New York City, and he makes a video of himself saying, I just got canceled. "As I told Don Lemon," said Kara Swisher, who was weighing in, making some comments, "as I told him would happen, the owner of this platform, Musk, sent a terse text to his reps, contract terminated, after an interview Lemon did with Musk last Friday that was not to the adult toddler's liking, including questions about his ketamine use. This much-touted multi-million-dollar deal was a pricey effort to attract high-profile media creators to X, not so much when perpetually aggrieved billionaires in desperate need for constant affirmation run the place. So much for free speech. I had told Don that this is exactly what would occur, including at a recent book tour event in New York City for my memoir, Burn Book, that Don moderated, despite promises by Musk and Linda Yaccarino," that's the CEO of X, "who extravagantly touted this deal to advertisers, that this time it was different. Well, it's again clear who's actually in charge. A thin-skinned, rich dude," this is what Kara Swisher said, "a thin-skinned, rich dude who operates via petty whims and exhausting grievances and who calls every fair question a hit piece, who does that remind you of?" The last tweet was accompanied by a GIF of former President Donald Trump. To conclude, Swisher said, "But X will have to pay out, so another unnecessary cost to a business going in the wrong direction." We'll see. This is, again, all of these things play out in real time for us. It's not like when I was growing up and you waited till the 6 o'clock evening news to get a sort of a synopsis, maybe a summary of what happened in any particular arena, whether it was a political arena or environmental, wherever it was. You had to wait, and then it was concise. And we believed it was, for the most part, not particularly partisan, one way or the other. Not anymore. Now we watch the battle royale taking place right in front of our eyes all the time, every day. And I don't know what's more interesting, the potential of a Don Lemon show or the potential of this epic battle between Musk and Lemon. And don't think that both of them don't know how valuable the PR is if they duke it out like this publicly. And then, of course, all the shots that'll get taken at Donald Trump. Some of these people just never seem to get tired. They just go after Trump, even when they have proof, poll numbers and anecdotal information and actual statistical data that shows them everything they're doing, everything they're trying to do to Donald Trump keeps elevating his standing, propels him even higher in public opinion polls. You would think at some point these rather intelligent, or so they keep telling me they're rather intelligent people, would figure out that what they're doing is not working. And maybe they ought to stop doing it. But I don't think you can teach an old dog new tricks. And some of these old dogs, you know, until they are moved aside, until they literally just get out of the way and let people who understand run the world, this is about as much fun as we're going to have watching this kind of battle. And I'm okay with that, you know. I would be very disappointed in the final analysis if Musk terminated the contract over some petty hurt feelings because he didn't like the content or the context of questions that were asked of him. Guess what? You don't need it to be free speech if everybody agrees on it. The freedom part comes in where there is disagreement. So we'll see. It's a pretty bizarre attack that Musk has launched at Don Lemon. Not that, you know, that's, I think it's fun. Maybe it's just me. But he said that I canceled the partnership, not for the reasons that he said, that Don Lemon said. His approach was basically just CNN, but on social media, which doesn't work, as evidenced by the fact that CNN is dying. This is what Musk said, right? And instead of it being the real Don Lemon, it was really just Jeff Zucker talking through Don, so it lacked authenticity. All this said, Lemon and Zucker are, of course, welcome to build their viewership on this platform along with everyone else. I don't know what that means. But it's interesting because Musk is clear that this whole woke ideology and all this woke nonsense that has infiltrated so many of these social media platforms is lousy for America. And so we'll see. And, you know, I don't like Don Lemon, but you shouldn't have given him a show if you were going to restrict what he was allowed to say. And if he's going to act like he's on CNN, what did you think he was going to act like? You think he was going to turn into a conservative overnight? Or even a reasonable human being overnight? Or even, I don't know, a heterosexual overnight? I don't know what. Anyway, don't forget coming up after me, Eric Erickson, followed by Joe Pags and Lars Larson and the Overnight Guys. And tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., Jen and Bill will be back with the South Florida Morning Show, followed by Brian Kilmeade at 9. And at noon, the FAU, or not FAU, the Seminole game will be on, and I'll be back at 3 o'clock. So stay right where you are. I have one more segment left today. So, of course, we're running out of time, but I have two stories that I have got to talk about. I don't know if there'll be No Restraint podcast or if I'll get to some of it tomorrow, but there is an effort in Congress right now to look at an organization of lawyers. It's actually a union. I didn't even know that lawyers had unions, but apparently they do. The Association of Legal Aid Attorneys is a union which represents about a little less than 3,000 public interest attorneys and advocates in New York City. And they are now being accused of fostering a hostile environment towards Jews after the October 7th massacre. Now, I want you to think about this for just overnight until I get to talk about it tomorrow. Because the Legal Aid Society and attorneys who do nothing but pro bono kind of work or work for a very little amount of money for the public interest, you know, people who do advocacy law versus people who are trying to make a lot of money doing law. A lot of them are Jewish. You know, apparently what I'm seeing here is about fully a third of them are Jewish. And you can't start becoming like an anti-Semitic platform with all those people that you're supposed to be representing. So I'm going to, you know, find out as much as I can. I've got an inside line at the Free Press because they've got all these messages that came out of something called a gaggle, which is a group chat. And it's pretty in your face attacking Jewish lawyers and saying they were mentally disturbed and just some really terrible things were said. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that if I get to it tomorrow. Otherwise, it's going to be a whole No Restraint podcast. But start looking at that information because I want you to be up to speed when I do it. Okay? See, I like my audience to be ahead of every other audience in the country. It's not, and by the way, it's not that hard these days because most of the shows are a lot of fluff and nonsense, and we're not. So we can talk about some serious stuff, and that's what we're going to do when it comes to these lawyers, union lawyers that are now calling their Jewish colleagues, deranged and mentally ill and all the rest of it. The anti-Semitism in this country right now is just legendary. It's scaring me. No end. And then I want to talk about the TikTok ban, and I want to talk about Google's AI chatbot. Because if you ask it a question about an upcoming election, you can only do it if you are living in a country where there are no elections taking place. This TechCrunch has learned that the search giant has started to restrict queries made in Gemini. Gemini is the Google's AI chatbot. When they relate to elections in any market globally where elections are taking place. Man, speech and freedom, they're under assault, they're under attack, and we got to be mindful. And then, of course, all the other stuff we got to talk about. So I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, my plan is to be back here tomorrow at 3, game or no game. I'll be here at 3. If it be his will and he delays his coming, what lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself. Everybody else is taken. God bless you. God bless Israel. And God bless the United States of America. See you tomorrow at 3.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.